Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Now, Sydney, I noticed that you've got your computer pulled up in front of you today, but I bet you're wondering, why did I even do that? Why did I do it?
You know, actually, I walked through this in my head. I need it because I always have it up in front of me, and it's just part of it.
As a special treat for Sydney, we're recording this on Friday, tomorrow, March 27th, is Sydney's birthday.
That's right.
So as a special treat for Sydney, I told her, don't worry about it. I've got the medical history podcast for this week.
And I thought about this. You know, my birthday is tomorrow. By the time this is published, my birthday will be over. So this is like a double present because this will come out on Doctor's Day.
Oh, perfect.
It'll be released on Doctor's Day. So this is like also my present, you know, that you get me every year for Doctor's Day.
Yes,
you know how you get me a
doctor,
present for
your
that?
Your Doctor's Day present that you get all the time. Yes, you missed giving Sydney a gift. I'm sure you can still go to Harmony House and make a donation in her name. I'm sure she'd appreciate that for her birthday.
Actually, yes. If somebody was going to get me a present, that is exactly what I would want you to do.
Yeah.
Is donate to Harmony House.
But that is not why we're here. We're here to entertain, delight, and educate you thanks to Justin McElroy's Sawbones. It's a medical history podcast that I have crafted, and I'm going to tell you, Sydney, that means that you, my friend, now, are you looking ahead at the notes?
I was pulling up the notes. Are these notes really titled Gamer Danger? Is that really what they're...
I didn't ever think about you seeing that.
In all caps, no less, Gamer Danger.
I just thought it was a good... Shut up!
Gamer Danger.
I did my best.
I like the all caps. I don't usually title my
this
Google
is not
Docs
a time
in all
for,
caps.
For critiquing so. Me, it is a time for educating, entertaining, and delighting. Please don't read ahead.
I'm not reading ahead.
You're gonna freak me out.
I just pulled it up so that you pull up the notes when I'm,
Sydney,
you know,
I'm
doing
a,
this.
I'm a gamer. I'm 100% gamer.
Are you?
But that comes with certain hazards. And I feel like in the medical community sometimes
that comes with hazards like spilling your Mountain Dew all over your gaming console.
Okay, can I tell you something? You're getting into some very cruel stereotypes that are not helpful to this discussion.
No, you just like Mountain Dew.
I've been covering video games for my first writing job ever was when I was 13 years old writing with Chuck Minsker, the Game View column for the Herald Dispatch. I've been writing about video games for nearly 30 years at this point. I've been covering them for a very long time. Professionally, I cover them for the past, I don't know, 15 years plus for a living. So I followed this space very carefully, and I've made a note whenever there is like a overlap between the interest of medicine and the interest of video games.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done in the past like medically themed video games. We've talked about those on Sawbones.
You did that episode.
I did, and now I'm trying it again. I'm so far outside my comfort zone. I never realize how distracting it is when I'm looking at I'm never going to look at a screen again. I'm just going to keep my eyes locked on you because I didn't realize how disorienting it is when you're not looking at me. So listen, I'm outside my comfort zone with medical stuff, so I'm going to try to talk to you about the way medicine and video games overlap.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'm going to talk to you about it through the lens of Gamer Danger.
Yes.
It's not a joke. And you're going to feel bad very quickly. So I'm warning you now.
I would like to.
You'll be ashamed of your words and deeds.
I'm not going to feel bad about making fun of your all caps title Gamer Danger, but I would like to apologize for the Mountain Dew joke.
Yeah. Well, it's too
I
late
would
now.
Like to apologize. It's already in That was unnecessary and cruel and stereotypical. But okay. You do, to be fair, you do really like Mountain Dew.
I do really like Mountain Dew. So, okay. I want to talk about a lot of different ways in which games are dangerous. Video games are dangerous for mm-hmm. our youth.
Sure.
The number one, though, and I think that this has actually become more of a prominent issue in the past few years, and mm-hmm. I think will continue to be, esports is blossoming. It's growing. There are leagues of people who are playing video games against each other professionally in games like StarCraft II and Overwatch and League and you name it, Fortnite. Probably. It's probably an esports thing. I don't know if Fortnite's an esports thing. But
I probably couldn't name
Call
it.
Call of Duty, of course, is a huge
esports
thing.
Are they still playing GoldenEye?
Not as much as you would think. But with that has come an increase in gaming-related injuries, specifically in this instance, I'm talking about repetitive stress injuries, or as I call them, RSIs.
As you call them.
The number one, and the one that is probably the most common and the most cruel, is gamer's thumb. Mm-hmm. Now, gamer's thumb is more common in obviously console games. This isn't a big problem if you're doing like a keyboard and mouse type
sure,
game.
But
if you're,
that makes sense.
If you're using the thumbstick, gamer's thumb is one nickname given to a condition called, you may have to help me with this bit, mm-hmm. Quervain's.
De Quervain's.
De Quervain's tenosynovitis.
De Quervain's?
Yeah.
Tenosynovitis.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a condition where the tendons that move your thumb become inflamed. Mm-hmm. So you're mm-hmm. moving your thumb around, and it can be serious. It can be very painful. I'm going to tell you about this specifically. See, Sid, specifically, gamer's thumb affects the tendon sheaths of the extensor pollicis brevis and abductor pollicis longus muscles. The muscles pull the thumb away from the hand and palm, and you get gamer's thumb. Your thumb mm-hmm. starts to hurt because you game too hard.
Right.
Now, in the 80s, I think this is hilarious. They called it Nintenditis, which is very good. And we should not have moved away from Nintenditis so quickly.
I feel like I probably had, I mean, maybe not a full-blown case of Nintenditis back in the day.
Yeah.
But I remember those days, those nights when you would go to bed and go, oh.
I
Street Fightered too hard.
You fought the street too much. And this is a serious issue. Not specifically gamer's thumb, but definitely this sort of repetitive stress injury has ended careers of esports players who, you know, even with like surgery and taking care of themselves, are still not able to continue to compete at the same level. There's one prominent case from earlier this year. Thomas Zuma Paparato was a Call of Duty player who ended his career at 25 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
Because the pain he was experiencing. So there's a big push to get people to take this seriously, especially mm-hmm. people who are pros who are doing this. I mean, for lengths of time that are not necessarily advisable for the common human body, right?
Well, you know what? It's interesting because what you're getting into is kind of the same conversation we have when we talk about, like, extreme sports or like extreme endurance sorts of activities, mm-hmm. things that we start to understand that the human body is not like necessarily built to just do mm-hmm. naturally, but we have developed all of these ways to try to like push the bounds of human performance. Do you think, I wonder if that will, will that happen in this space? Like, will you see, I mean, cause there's research in this, right? Like there's tons of research and sure. like, how do these high-performing endurance athletes do these things that the human body isn't really made to do safely and continuously. I don't know. Tom Brady probably has a secret.
And these break down to, I mean, there are other RSIs that are common amongst gamers. Carpal tunnel is obviously huge. That's something that I personally, as not a pro, sort of an amateur gamer, have struggled with and had to have treated. Trigger finger, tennis elbow, maybe Wii tennis elbow in the specific case. But
I was gonna say we're gonna have to rename it.
Yeah. Well, just stick with Nintenditis. So what do you do? One, play less, mm-hmm. Take breaks, more frequent breaks are what it advised, and stretching those mm-hmm. Against basically whatever you're doing, right? Taking breaks while you're playing, treating it can be rest, it can be NSAIDs, and in some extreme cases, like steroids and surgery. Mm-hmm. So there is a big push, and kidding aside, like there's a big push in these communities to get these young people who are not thinking like, I'm going to injure myself playing games, and to get them to take this seriously, because a little bit, you know, it's that old ounce of prevention, mm-hmm. you know, pound of cure kind of deal.
Yeah, well, and I can imagine that's especially true if it has become your livelihood, and taking a break is probably the best thing you can do if you have one of these injuries. But if your income depends on regularly gaming, how do you take a break?
Yeah.
You know, so that puts you in a tough spot. So you're right.
It's a balance. A lot of pro athletes, I'm sure, are constantly, you know,
yeah,
trying to
discussion. Yeah, exactly.
There is so that is probably the most serious in terms of like gaming injuries. That is an actual constant problem. Others are less so. Let's talk about the Nintendo 64. Now, I know that you had a Nintendo 64 mm-hmm. with the, I think, probably second worst controller ever made right after the GameCube controller, though that's debatable. I know some people love the GameCube controller, but the Nintendo 64 controller was miserable. And the highlight of this miserable—
I'm looking at a picture of it to remind myself.
It looks kind of like a Batarang. So look up that, and what you're going to see, the most prominent feature is an analog stick.
Oh,
right,
dead
center. And there, in a game called Mario Party, if you ever enjoyed the game Mario Party on Nintendo 64, there were many games that wanted you to spin that stick as fast as you could.
Mm.
The design was for you to use your thumb, obviously, to spin it as fast as you could. But anybody with half a brain would instantly realize that if they were just to put the palm of their hand on top of the stick and use their entire wrist to get that movement, they could get a lot more stars. You're going to get a lot more stars that way. There's no two ways about it. But
that's a nice tip.
It's not.
Oh.
Because some some players got blisters, burns, and lacerations from rotating the analog stick using the palms of their hands instead of their thumb.
Lacerations.
Well, I mean, burns are probably the wilder part. Like, you definitely need to you need to go pro if you're like, I set my hand on, it's on fire. I set myself on fire with my incredible speed.
They don't mean burns, right? Really? Like, I mean, they generated
friction burns.
A friction injury. Yeah. Not they actually generated enough heat. Can you imagine how fast you'd have to do that?
So there weren't any lawsuits filed, but there were about 90 complaints received by the New York Attorney General's office. Nintendo agreed to a settlement. The settlement was they paid the legal fees of the state. It was like $75,000. They provided gloves for anyone who had hurt their hands while playing the game.
Well, were they cool gloves?
I don't know. I don't know if these are like collector's items.
How do you not own these gloves?
These
feel like something that Justin McElroy would have sought out.
But like, I don't know if they would want to like necessarily brand them. Let me check the bay real quick. Let me check the bay real quick and see if there's Mario Party gloves. Because I don't know if you would necessarily want to brand these Mario Party gloves. Like, here, these are safe to use. Yeah, I don't see any on eBay. So I'm assuming maybe it's just like regular glove, regular safety
just
gloves.
Just like gloves.
Yeah, not
just
like
those arthritis gloves your dad wears.
Yes.
Like the fingerless gloves.
Exactly.
I bet they were fingerless.
At the time, it could have cost Nintendo up to $80 million. So that they have backed off of analog stick rotation since Mario Party 2.
Wait, what year was this that they sent these gloves out?
Hold on. You asked me too quick.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. It would have been like late 99, 2000, somewhere around there.
I was trying to imagine what color scheme they would have gone with.
I really don't think they're trying to make them special. I think they're just trying to make them like just okay. just enough to, Nintendo issues game gloves is what they were called. So that was very serious situation. They backed off of that. Now they're the thumbstick on the Switch. I think they've used those sorts of mini games again in Mario Party, but the thumbsticks are way better than they used to be, and they're a lot more comfortable. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you're going to get the same sort of. And also, Mario Party 2 is on Virtual Console.
So, that was not a fun controller. I will agree with that.
It was not a good controller. Now, the Wii, of course, is hugely dangerous. A lot of problems.
The Wii is hugely dangerous. The Wii is
hugely dangerous. She laughs, but I mean, not hugely dangerous. I'm, of course, I should say, I'm overstating this for impact. But there are problems with the Wii in like the Wii Fit Balance Board. Do you ever see that? That's mm-hmm. not a very common thing, but you remember that. In the United Kingdom, a 14-year-old girl suffered a fracture in her right foot when she fell off the balance board.
Oh, no.
I know. See, now you feel bad for laughing. There's falls while playing is a Wii-associated injury that was in this there was this big study in the New England Journal of Medicine, basically a little bit lighter study. What are you looking at here? You looking
a traumatic hemothorax?
Traumatic hemothorax, Sydney. Now, you shouldn't be reading along. Really, I'm the one who's supposed to read.
I was just surprised that they suffered a traumatic hemothorax.
But really, that was going to be my sort of to you. You know, I was going to say that to you and get your reaction. That's how this show is.
Okay, sorry.
You're not supposed to read the stuff off the screen. You'll note that I very rarely do that as the co-host. So traumatic hemothorax, that I don't know what that is exactly, but, you know, it sounds bad.
You have the definition here. Oh, I was going to let you read it so you could sound.
It's a collection of blood in the space between the chest wall and lung. There are also head injuries from being struck accidentally by a gaming partner. Basically, people put these Wiimotes around their wrists and they just went to town. There were TVs destroyed. There was a kid that lost vision in one eye because he got hit by a Wiimote. It's not a joke, folks. You start slinging these things around. That's why they got the wrist straps on there. And you know what? You leave those off at your own peril. That's all I will say.
Well, even with them on, I remember there was danger.
Sure.
Because, like, you can't just let that thing spin around your wrist. Like it's, you know, tethered closely enough not to harm someone.
There were, of course, if you do not remember this, if you were not around during this time period, Wii tennis was a massive, it was massive. The Wii was massively popular, and there were
reports because everybody did it.
Yeah,
it wasn't just the traditional what you think of as someone who plays video games, which I know has always been a false stereotype. But it really she expanded. Says
a mere 15 minutes after trudging out the
mountain. I apologize for it. I recognize that. No, but it really like my parents played Wii tennis. This is a big deal.
It's a
my
big
parents
deal.
Playing a video game. That is a huge deal.
Wii tennis and Rock Band. That's the only ones you ever got your parents on. Now, of course, there's a danger of DVTs.
A DVT just from playing a video game?
I know. It sounds shocking, Sid, and we're going to talk about that and so much more.
All right.
Gamer danger on the horizon right after we go to the billing department.
Let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth.
Hey, the parental gift buying season is once again upon us. Well, it's almost upon us. Why not get an early start on it? You know, why not pick up a couple of Aura frames for dear old mom, dad, your friend's mom, your cousin's dad, your son's dad? That's you, actually, if I understand genetics properly. But no, Aura frames is a great gift for anybody. I describe it as a high-tech gift that you don't have to be high-tech to know how to use. You can set it up before you give the gift. And then when you take a great picture with your phone, you can use the Aura frames app to just wirelessly zip it to that frame. Just a couple of taps and it'll show up on the frame auto-magically. Imagine you could just keep everybody updated, keep everybody in the loop with what's going on in your life, and they don't have to do anything. It's just you sending along pictures to whoever you like. It is a wonderful gift that we have gotten for people in our lives with our own money just because we think it is wonderful. And we love when friends will send a photo through Aura and pop up. We can keep up with everybody that way. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code Sawbones at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. I wouldn't describe myself as having a green thumb. I've killed a lot of stuff, and I know people say that, but what that means is I don't know what I'm doing with plants. But I'll tell you what, folks, fast-growing trees made it easy. They helped me to find three plants. I got two apple trees and a berry bush that are going to live in my yard, and they helped me pick the right kinds of plants for my climate. told me how to put it in. They even answered a question about it when I called them on the phone. Imagine that. In 2024, you can call an actual expert and say, hey, I got this question for you. And they were super duper helpful. The instructions were great. And I'll tell you what, the proof's in the proverbial pudding. All three of those plants are doing gangbusters. And I look forward to eating free apples because I assume they're the most delicious kind. Fast Growing Trees will ship these plants out and directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. They're going to show up looking great. Along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. Right now, they got the best deals online, up to half off on select plants. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off when using code Sawbones at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com. Using the code Sawbones at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code Sawbones. Offer is valid for a limited time. Tell them we sent you.
Hey, it's John Moe. And look, these are challenging times for our mental and emotional health. I get it. That's why I'm so excited for my new podcast, Depression Mode. We're tackling depression, anxiety, trauma, stress, the kinds of things that are just super common but don't get talked about nearly enough. Conversations that are illuminating, honest, and sometimes pretty funny, with folks like Kelsey Darrah, Open Mike Eagle, and Patton Oswalt.
Humphrey Bogart was never in therapy. And then my dad said, yeah, but he smoked a carton of cigarettes a day. So he was in therapy.
Plus psychiatrists, psychologists, and all kinds of folks. On Depression Mode, we're working together, learning, helping each other out. We're a team. Join our team. Depression Mode for maximum fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sydney, what is a DVT for people that don't know?
A deep vein thrombosis. And it's a blood clot. It's a collection of, you know, various cells that are in your blood that have formed a clot. So like something that blocks it. You probably know what a blood clot is. It's a little ball of blood and cells and stuff that blocks the flow of blood through something. So in this case, a vein.
And it is a risk when you're doing a very long gaming session. There's a risk for DVT because it can happen when you've been immobilized for too long. This is not a theoretical thing. I have two reports here. In one, there's one from a man who had been playing games with his kids for 8 hours.
Goodness.
And blood clots formed in the patient's lower legs, causing a DVT, and he had to be treated with emergency blood thinners to remove the clots. Now, I don't know what game that is, but I would love to know what got you to sit. Honestly, if I could get my kids to sit down for 8 hours, the DVTs might almost be worth it. I'm kind of on the fence about
it. I don't need them to sit for 8 hours. If I could get them to sit for 8 minutes so that I could, eat a salad or go pee, that would be cool.
A young man also in New Zealand developed life-threatening blood clots in his leg, according to this story on Live Science, after playing 4 days of PlayStation games. I'm assuming that's not 4 interrupted days because we're getting into some hygiene issues there and sleep and bathrooms.
I've seen those gamer chairs that, and I don't know if they're real.
Have the toilets built into them?
I've seen people share those on Facebook, and I always assume it's a joke, but they're like, need this. And most gamers
do have gamer chairs with potties in them, Sid. That is a correct stereotype.
They have those cool looking. I've seen the ones they have on their streams and stuff. They all look cool and space age. But these are like recliners, basically. So you can just sort of set your controller to the side, recline back, take a nap, sit right back up, and go right back to gaming. And there's little mini fridge and all that. I bet these aren't real. Anyway, moving on. You know, the thing is, anything you do, if you hold still long enough in a seated position or in a laying down position, you know, if you're laying down or seated, it puts you at risk for a DVT. Now, a lot of people say, well, why doesn't everybody get them while you sleep? Well, you move while you sleep, you're moving and stuff. But that's really the risk. It's the same reason why airplanes, you're at risk for them. Long car trips, you're at risk for them. Anything after a surgery, maybe, if you're immobile for a while you're recovering from something. In the hospital, if you're sick and you can't move, because you just don't move. So that would be my concern is, you shouldn't be playing a video game so long that you're not moving at all. Mm-hmm. You know? That you're holding that still. Because that's a degree of stillness that we usually don't hold for long periods of time.
This happened to a friend of mine. This happened to my friend Kevin Kelly, who's somebody I worked with at Joystick.
That might mean
I don't think it was after a long gaming session, but
that might mean you need more breaks. And this is true for people who work on computers in general. Yeah. I think there's a risk here. So we need more breaks. Get up and walk around some more.
I know what you're thinking. The reality of these gaming injuries is just too much. Maybe it would be nice to be whisked away into a virtual reality. Well, no. The danger lurks there, too.
No. I totally see this.
So what's the most common? Obviously, the most common is, you put on a VR helmet and you're ambulating around a space and you're not following the safety guidelines, and maybe you didn't set up your barrier where it's supposed to be, or you left a toy train out in the middle of your office or whatever, and you walk into things, you punch a wall, you fall directly onto your face, and that is a danger. This has resulted in strains, broken bones, and concussions from people just falling. Running into stuff.
It doesn't surprise me. It's very disorienting the few times I've done it. Although I can't engage with virtual reality very much. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're going to mention one of the other.
Nausea is a more transient problem, but is definitely there. There's also, sort of tying into the RSIs we talked about earlier, there's an issue of neck strain with a burden on the cervical spine because you're supporting the weight of this helmet. And I've already got some heft up there. On top of the neck, and then I'm going to pile
right,
on
with this, your big head.
With the VR helmet. Thank you, dear. that is a concern. It's also worth noting that, and this is like, I don't want to sow seeds of fear, uncertainty, and doubt, but there is also some early discussion that maybe as we transition more into people spending more time in VR, that there might be some longer term dangers that we're not necessarily aware of yet. One would be we're not used to processing the sorts of like intense stimuli that you get from this, and that may not be good for your like nervous system, your circulatory system, like the fear, the anxiety, like being directly pumped in, that the effect of that sort of like fight or flight mode, and putting yourself in that constantly could be damaging over the long term.
I can see that. I mean, to start to think of corollaries to that, yes, there definitely is a concern there. It would be interesting to see how that plays out in a simulated situation where on some level you know you aren't in danger at all times.
Right.
If that would protect you, I don't know, because it is very realistic. Although the only one that I could engage with was that one where we were in Disney World and I was sitting on a bench, not moving, so that I could just look around, because as soon as I move, I'm going to vomit. I'm going to hurl right away. I'll never have that problem. It makes me so nauseated so quickly to do any of that.
There's also some anecdotal evidence that forcing your brain to process like three-dimensional images in that way and the eye strain that it caused maybe create longer-term issues for you. Although, again, none of this is not scientifically proven right now, because a lot of this technology is early and we don't have people who have spent the kind of time in VR, but it's something to be aware of. I mean, I think with a lot of this stuff, right? Balance. It's just about balance and finding a balance between getting your game on, getting your points, as they say. Now, Sydney, I am not just here to bury video games in danger. I wanted to briefly talk about the good stuff that that video games do in terms of health.
All right.
Obviously the Nintendo products, when especially the Wiimote became such a big thing, a lot of people saw the opportunity for encouraging people to become more active, but also to use it in some sorts of physical therapy like the balance board. It has been used to train balance in older people, like the balance board has been used, or those with Parkinson's disease. The Wii remote controller can be used to improve basic laparoscopic skills. I don't know what that means, but
like camera-assisted surgeries where they do like a minimally invasive procedure, meaning that they only make a few small incisions and just insert a camera and some other instruments into tiny incisions, as opposed to a big open procedure where they have to make a much larger incision. The healing is faster, the recovery is faster from laparoscopic procedures. So a lot of surgeries have been transitioned to that when possible.
There's been a good amount of research into using VR for physical therapy, because where your motions are being tracked, it can help you to make sure that you're performing the physical therapy properly and monitor the kinematics, it says here, of your limb movements. So that kind of research was done actually using the Kinect, which was Microsoft's failed camera.
I remember that, though, because it sent all those little spots, those little dots all over your room. That yeah, but that makes a lot of sense because that is a big problem in various kinds of therapy where if you do the exercises correctly, they can really help, but you have to make sure you're doing them correctly every time or else you might get no benefit or even worse, maybe you're doing something that would actually make it worse.
Now, I don't know if you know about this, but there was a warning when the Nintendo 3DS was first released, which was a 3D platform that kids under six probably shouldn't play it because it would just like demolish their vision. This is what mm-hmm. everyone was told.
I remember this.
Right. It's there apparently not a lot of evidence for that. they have backed away from that. It is not a they don't seem to have found any sort of evidence that that is an issue. But actually, in the story from 2011, the American optometric. American Optometric Association, the mm-hmm. AOA, says that 3D may actually help uncover subtle disorders that can result in learning difficulties for kids. So if they have trouble processing the 3D images from these mm-hmm. things, that might actually be indicate it can help them detect vision problems that will continue to be a problem for them.
That's really cool.
Isn't that cool?
That would have been cool when I was younger because my utter lack of spatial reasoning. Maybe somebody would have picked up on that and helped me with it because now I'm an adult who has no spatial reasoning skills.
And it's the vision continues to develop from birth. So the earlier we find this stuff out, the better. Video games are used a lot in therapy. There is, for example, a game called Sparks with an X that is used to just treat depression. It is a game where you know, like do specific goals and it can help you monitor your own emotional state. There is also a lot of use of video games in and you can find all kinds of cases of this.
How have they validated that? Like have they done studies to compare it to other treatments for depression? Do you know, like to compare it to like therapy or a medication or something like that?
Let me see here. Hold on. They tested Sparks in according to this, a large study. In New Zealand, the results were published in the British Medical Journal in 2012. Mm. They found that it was as effective as standard care for youths 12 to 19 years old seeking help for depression. It reduced depression, anxiety, feelings of hopelessness, and improved quality of life and many other effects.
That's fascinating.
These changes lasted for at least 3 months. But that also you see video games that are not specifically designed for this, but being used in play therapy with younger kids, which obviously that's something that's been going on for a long time. You see toys being used in therapy with younger kids to help to get them to open up. But there's a lot of people who are using video games as a way to like get kids to start talking, like interacting with them in these play spaces where they feel a bit more comfortable, you know, like doing their therapy session in like Fortnite or whatever, where not only like, or maybe probably less violent video games than that, but still
sure.
using video games as a way to start a discussion going to using video games to as part of like dramatic play that could be useful in development, things like that. Also, and this is real, I think these last two are fascinating, although a little bit more ephemeral. Video games have been used in as a form of pain relief. There are studies where people will like put their hands into cold water or something and then have the distraction of a video game there to help them tolerate that. They've also been used in kids who are undergoing, you know, chemotherapy, stuff like that as a form of distraction.
That's interesting.
From this one study I found, I love hearing medical people talk about video games because it's the most clinical possible thing. Those interested in taking part were offered the possibility of playing video games on PlayStation Vita on demand with a range of different alternatives available depending on the patient's preference and age as follows. Age-rated puzzles, sports, platforms, and strategy games. Yes, those are the genres of video games that there are. Platforms.
What are platforms?
Platforming games like Mario, but no one calls they're not platforms. That is not what they're referred to as.
Somebody had to look that up.
Yeah.
You know, somebody just was researching that as opposed to just like asking somebody, hey, do you play video games?
Yeah. platforms? Is that anything?
Is this a thing?
This last one, especially cool. VR headsets have been adapted to help improve eyesight. There's a startup called Give Vision that made a device called the Sight Plus that helps to restore vision in people whose eyesight has deteriorated beyond repair. It projects a video. So you wear the helmet, right? Projects mm-hmm. a video of the real world into the working part of the retina.
Hmm.
There was a clinical trial at Moorfields Eye Hospital that suggested improved eyesight in 59 of the 60 participants, with nearly half saying they would wear the device for watching TV, reading, or going to the theater. The firm is partnering with Sony to develop its next device.
Wow, that's kind of amazing. Yeah, that's very cool.
So anyway, video games are terrible and dangerous, except sometimes they're good. And that's the scoop from Sawbones.
Was the whole idea here that at the end I would say, well, I guess I should let you play video games more?
No, I'm 40. I play video games whenever I darn well please, just happens to align with when the kids are asleep and you're busy doing other things, or I've woken up before everyone because of my ongoing struggles with anxiety. But video games are here to stay, and they are dangerous. Unless you use them in moderation, in which case they're probably fine, maybe even helpful.
I've been sitting here thinking what the perfect use for this gamer danger in all caps is. Like, where can we use this? I thought, well, you should write a book. No, don't write a book. This looks like a pamphlet that you'd find when you go to, like, the school nurse.
Yeah.
You know, where, like, they have all the pamphlets about all the stuff that can go wrong for teenagers. And then they have one that's titled Gamer Danger.
Have,
like, some kids out on the playground and one's, like, laying there, like, holding their leg screaming. And it's, like, Gamer Danger. And you're like, what is happening?
As much as I'd love sit here and listen to my wife continue to rag on me, we do have to end the show here. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to the taxpayers for the use of their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program.
And thank you to Justin for doing the research for this episode so that I could take a break this week. That was a great birthday present.
You're welcome, Squid. If you want to get Sid something, head on over to the Harmony House website, and you can help people who are experiencing homelessness in Huntington, West Virginia. It is a wonderful organization, and I think they would be happy for any house. Any support you could offer, harmonyhousewv.com. And let Sydney know you donated. I'm sure it would brighten her day.
That would. Thank you.
That is going to do it for us. So until next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
Fun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.